Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. A quick disclosure. For important disclosures, please see the Morgan Stanley Research Disclosure website at morganstanley.com/researchdisclosures. If you have any questions, please reach out to your Morgan Stanley sales representative. Very excited to welcome to the conference our next keynote speaker. Lachlan Murdoch is the chairman and CEO at Fox Corporation. Lachlan is coming to us from LA. Lachlan, it's great to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Ben. Great to see you as well. I wish we were together in person, but thank you for having me.
We'll do what we have to do here, hopefully next year. Maybe to start, you know, it's sort of hard to believe that your investor day as Fox Corporation, you know, was sort of born was actually less than 2 years ago. a lot's happened since then. And I'm wondering if you could talk to us about the last, you know, nearly 2 years and what's happened with Fox and the industry and how that impacts your outlook and how you run the, you know, think about strategy and growing your company.
Yeah, sure. It is. It's crazy to think it was less than 2 years ago. There's a lot of water under the bridge, and you know, a lot of impacts in the media world, and obviously for everyone's business and businesses. So it is amazing to think back at that. But when we do, and we say, look, you know, why did we create New Fox when we sold the assets to Disney? What were we trying to achieve? And we spelled it out, you know, that day, which were, you know, a smaller, more focused, nimble company with strong brands, a portfolio of, you know, very defined, smaller portfolio of very strong brands that would be incredibly resilient and offer a tremendous growth profile for us. And then what's transpired since then, you know, where we've had a global pandemic unexpectedly. We've had, you know, worsening until recently, they've ameliorated a little bit, but worsening subscriber declines in the cable universe than we had originally thought we would have a couple of years ago. And this, you know, tremendously insane news cycle, all of these things are hitting us at once. And yet we've seen that through all of that, our thesis would prove right. You know, we've used the power of our brands, we've consolidated, we've been nimble, and I think we've had, you know, industry-leading growth in revenue, both on an affiliate and an advertising perspective side.
You know, I often think about your company. It's highly cash generative, which is certainly attractive to investors. It gives you a lot to play with as you look forward. But I've always felt like the big question is, what does the company want to be when it grows up long term? You know, not that these are new assets, but you have opportunities to diversify the company given your balance sheet and your cash flow generation. So, what kind of diversification strategies are you trying to put in place? Where are you focused in terms of taking the core business and using that to build a growth company, which I think is what you really tried to nail back in at your investor day?
Sure. So, you know, we have a tremendous balance sheet and you know, very strong cash flows. Obviously, the margins in our businesses, particularly obviously in Fox News, are sort of industry leading. And you know, we've used that you know, in two different ways this year. We've made strategic acquisitions such as Tubi, and you know, we've talked about before. That business we ended up closing in the early days of COVID. You know, probably around this time, well, certainly around this time last year. You know, revenues have doubled since we bought Tubi, and you know, it's going from strength to strength in every metric that we judge it by and we follow. And we've also, you know, continued, which we felt to be important for our shareholders and our stakeholders, particularly this year. You know, with a, you know, relatively aggressive share buyback in order to, you know, return some capital to our shareholders. And as we go forward, you know, we'll I think we aim to complete $1 billion worth of that share buyback this fiscal year. And so as we go forward, you know, we continue to look at M&A opportunities. I think you'll see us focus, for pretty obvious reasons on businesses that are less exposed or not exposed to the cable ecosystem, and try to find businesses that will have tailwinds to them as opposed to headwinds.
So you may have heard this, but direct to consumer and streaming is all the rage these days. We've talked about that at this conference quite a bit, and we've seen some pretty incredible re-rating of companies in the market on the back of this. I often get into debates with investors about whether Fox should be doing more, less, something different than you're doing. You mentioned Tubi. What's interesting from your point of view on digital broadly as Fox looks to extend its brands? And, I'd also love to hear what's not interesting or attractive.
Well, first of all, let me answer that question in two ways. Or in two stages. The first part is, why does the market focus on direct to consumer, right? And particularly if you're a traditional scaled media business in this country or anywhere, and that's because traditional entertainment assets are at risk of being marginalized as the cable universe declines. It's exactly the reason why when we set up Fox, we envisioned it as a business that's entirely focused on live news and live sports. And live news and live sports are the two sort of underpinning genres of programming that really drive the cable bundle, and we feel will drive the cable bundle for a long time to come. So. Absolutely. If you own a movie studio, or you own a big TV studio, or you own entertainment cable channels, getting to a D2C future as quickly as you can is incredibly important to protect those assets or save those assets. We feel like we're in a better position being focused on live news and live sport, and we saw that obviously through the pandemic. The value of those brands through the pandemic has never been more obvious. Having said that, we are diving headfirst into a direct to consumer world. The acquisition of Tubi is an example of that. We don't want to compete in a subscription video on demand world. It's really because we don't have the entertainment assets to do so, nor do we need to. But we believe we can really win in the advertising video on demand world. Tubi's been incredibly aggressive. They've been incredibly smart with how they've built that business, and we believe they're in position to win. In addition to that, what we are doing as FOD, like Fox Nation, it's very strong. All of our digital assets are very strong and have come through this year. Pretty significant growth. I think in digital advertising this year, it will exceed $1.2 billion, which for a company our size is a terrific result.
Sure. Let me ask you a little bit more about Tubi. It's something we're all, always trying to get more disclosure out of you guys, given the growth rates. But what's the opportunity here? You guys didn't buy this that long ago. I got to think you think the opportunity is even larger today. And I don't know if you have a sense of this yet, maybe too early, but what is the margin structure of a successful AVOD business look like over time?
For us, it's important, we're proud of the fact, but we are Tubi is actually profitable today. I think that's a bad thing. I think we want to reinvest the profits of Tubi back into the business. We want it to be and we believe it will be a very significant growth driver for our business. But ultimately, as it matures, do you get to a I think most of the analysts world, banking world, believes SVOD can get to a 20-30% margin. I imagine you could get the same in AVOD. But we're not thinking about that yet. We're driving the business. We have huge aspirations for it, and we'll continue to invest those profits back into it. But short of losing we're not in the SVOD corral where we're losing or those companies are losing or investing billions of dollars to fight out their position. I think we can win in a much more clever and careful way in AVOD.
What does Fox do for Tubi's growth? You know, when you think about integrating Tubi or integrating the Fox network and Fox News and trying to bring all the assets together, does that make this a bigger and better business longer term?
Well, I think that there are great sort of revenue synergies and sort of opportunities, both from an operational point of view, a content point of view. We're a tremendous marketing platform for Tubi, which we're really starting to see the benefits of. But in addition to that, you know, from an advertising sales point of view, you know, we really combined the advertising sales team. Tubi, before we bought them, to be honest, was mostly selling programmatically. We now have the entire, you know, strength and breadth of the Fox sales team selling Tubi. It's part of you know, it was part of our you know, quasi upfront last year, and now, you know, a year into it, it's going to be a very significant part of our upfront coming up before the summer. And it's showing you know, real results already.
Got it. Let's talk a little bit about Fox News, which is, you know, sort of the engine from a cash flow point of view. A lot going on at that business over the last few months. A lot of press about relative rankings. We were speaking with Jason Keelar this morning about CNN, and news has been really strong, and people are leaning into it. For investors in Fox who are anxious about Fox News's, you know, leadership position and relevance as we look forward, you know, what's your message?
It's pretty simple. We've been in this business a long time. I think we have we bring a sort of a crystal clear sort of vision to it. We don't get emotional, and we don't manage the business or drive the business based on incomplete sort of data sets, right? And so what we talked about, you know, before, and we've said publicly in the media, we always expected going into any election that you'll see a dip in audience when you come out of that election cycle, and we saw that. We saw that about the same levels of, you know, MSNBC and CNN did in the last election cycle. That happened exactly as we projected, and you know, you can look back and you can see we were entirely accurate with that. What we didn't foresee was the news cycle post the election. The president not accepting the results, the second impeachment trial, and then, of course, the riots in Washington, D.C. So just while our audience was disappointed with the election results and taking a pause, and we started to see that dip, we saw our competitors in MSNBC and CNN, you know, have these big spikes with those news cycles. Well, now, as we've seen, as we projected, those spikes have now come back down to earth. I think CNN last week had its worst share since the week before the election. And that happens with CNN quite a lot. But what happens is that they still have a tremendous news brand, and news viewers come to CNN that aren't traditional news viewers or regular news viewers when there's a big news story. So you can see them, have, like, particularly around the Washington, D.C. riots, have this big spike. That's come back down to earth. I think in February, and this has improved as we went through February, but we won. We're number one again in prime time, and we're sort of neck and neck with MSNBC in total daytime viewers. So that's what we've seen. Now, looking forward, so we feel incredibly confident and pleased with that position. It's as we thought. Now, going forward, if history is any lesson, you know, the main beneficiary of the Trump administration was, from a ratings point of view, was MSNBC. MSNBC had the biggest lift relative to where it was before and relative to its peers through the Trump administration. We think that, and that's because they're in sort of loyal opposition, right? They called out the president when he needed to be called out. That's what our job is now, you know, with the Biden administration, and you'll see our ratings, you know, really improve from here, and we'll do so for at least the next 4 years.
And I'd imagine that, sort of on your right, that flank must feel reasonably confident there at this point. That was another area of concern as to whether we might see some new entrants on the right side.
I think we're very happy with where we're positioned. We've always said we're going to have more competition. It's insane to think that we would have the center and right of the political sort of news and opinion and analysis on our own. And we've always welcomed that competition. But that's different from saying that we have to, change our programming or change our direction because of that. We very much focus on the center right. We think that's where America is. 75 million people voted for a Republican president. Sometimes in spite of his his personality at times. And so they believe in those politics, and they feel strongly about those political and policy positions. And that's what we represent. And so, we're going to stick to the center right. We think that's where our audience is.
And maybe lastly, just on Fox News, I mean, I think there are parts of this business that have grown that maybe are less clear to all of us, things like the audio business and the digital business. And a lot of investors, I think, are concerned about your exposure to the bundle and cord cutting. Can you, flesh out at all, the opportunity for Fox News as a business to grow, particularly grow EBITDA, if we're dealing with kind of 5% cord cutting for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, so... So as business to grow, the first thing to say is the best thing about the news business is you're, entirely in control of your costs, right? Where there's no IP or other content costs that we're buying or that we have long-term contracts with. So we're entirely in control of our cost base, and it's why we've been able to maintain such high margins for so long. The second part is, though, is growing that business. Obviously, we still have a tremendous upside with advertising growth. We split our advertising between direct response and traditional agency advertising. That continues to grow. I know we'll talk about. I'm sure you'll have some questions later about advertising growth, but we're seeing tremendous advertising strength, particularly since the election. And then in the new businesses that we launched, we have you think of it as a news ecosystem, or new businesses and revenue streams based off of the one news gathering organization. And it's a lot of headlines around Fox News around our opinion hosts. The real engine though is a international news gathering organization that's relatively unparalleled. And so off of that, we have podcasting, we have the radio business. The dot-com business which is both sort of desktop and obviously on mobile is incredibly strong. We've launched Fox News internationally through apps just recently, which is beginning to grow. It's still small. And then Fox Nation as a subscription video on demand business. And all of those new businesses we've been able to do for sort of low incremental cost. And you'll see each of those grow and add to the whole.
Got it. Before we get into advertising, I do want to ask you about the NFL, which I was planning to ask you about anyway, before a lot of these press articles have come out. I'm sure, Lachlan, you're limited in what you can tell us, but there's no media company where the NFL is as substantial, as it is to Fox from a dollar point of view. So, what's your approach at Fox to this renewal? And can you tell us at all about what it means should Thursday Night Football, not be on Fox anymore?
Sure. Well, obviously, I can't get into the details, but you're right. We are, really the NFL's in terms of, numbers of hours and sort of numbers of sort of viewers, where they're by far their number one partner with both Thursday and Sunday afternoon. From what I know about the overall sort of negotiation, I read in the Wall Street Journal and other great publications. But it does feel like we're getting towards the end of this negotiation. It's been going a while. I don't think it's for us. I can only speak for ourselves. There's no imminent announcement. It feels like we're still apart. On a number of issues. So there's no imminent announcement. Certainly not on our deal. We've got a ways to go. But the NFL is a terrific partner. They've been a great partner of ours for 25 years. We're looking forward to getting to the end of this negotiation and being a partner with them for another 25 years. In respects to Thursday night football, when we picked up Thursday night, we did so because it offered a great a programming platform for a business that we knew would be spinning off and would have a sort of a young a new Fox. And so it's offered us a tremendous platform to promote and launch shows like 9-1-1, like The Masked Singer, which are franchises that will be ours for a long time to come. But it's also something we knew would give us some optionality going forward, right? So in this negotiation, balancing whether we have Thursday and Sunday. Whether we just kept Thursday or the most likely scenario is just keep Sunday, and it's offered us that optionality as we've worked through our future with the NFL.
Maybe one last question. I'll see if I can get you to answer. I think a year ago the conventional wisdom is that these might be shorter term deals than what we've seen in the past. We're hearing about 4, 5, 6 years. What is attractive to Fox to do a deal that's 10, 11 years long, given these are big dollars?
These are big dollars, historically they've gone up in each renewal, not down. I think a longer term deal makes sense. If you go too long, it's hard to project out and see what the world looks like in the distant future. But we feel pretty comfortable. We obviously run different scenarios and sensitivities around the pay TV ecosystem and what our businesses will look like during the length of the term. And we're pretty comfortable in the range where we are.
Great. So hopefully we'll have more specifics to ask you about in the not too distant future. So thank you for humoring me. Two more topics I want to hit on before we run out of time. You mentioned advertising earlier. It does feel like, the economy is getting a little bit of momentum. That's obviously important to the ad market. But what are you guys seeing at Fox from an advertising point of view here, sitting here in early March?
Sure. So let me start with a national, and then if I remember, we'll talk for a minute about local advertising. So nationally, we're seeing great strength. This is a really important, Ben, you'll appreciate this, a really important time of year for us because we are now heading into our kind of pre-upfront discussions with our advertising partners. We then get into this year as we move late, the new fronts, the sort of digital advertising upfronts, and then we get into the upfront. And so, seeing strength in this part of the season is a very, very positive sign. We're seeing scatter. Now, there's not a lot of scatter out there. We have more scatter, I think, than others because we, in our last upfront, which was, in the middle of the early stages of the pandemic, we held back some advertising. Turns out to be a smart thing to do, and so we've been in sale more than some others. And we're seeing scatter pricing on the entertainment side of the business up to 50% above the upfront pricing. We're seeing it up to 20% in news above the upfront pricing, and a similar level 20% or mid single digits in sport. So the strength of that. Of that market is a very positive sign as we lead into an upfront. Locally, you have, if we look at the quarter we're in today, It's a funny quarter. It's right before really we had the there's a bit of COVID impact in that last year. But you've got to strip out. So we're sort of pacing down. But if you strip out political impacts and you strip out in this quarter particularly, you strip out the Super Bowl, right? Because the Super Bowl absorbs a lot of spending. We're sort of flat pacing for the quarter if you strip those things out, right? The next quarter, the fourth quarter, though, you're comparing against the depth of COVID, right? It was about this time of year last year when we sent all of our advertising sales reps home and clients, pulled a ton of money out of the market. And if you remember, we had the conversations where we were being as flexible as possible to let them pull money and move it to sort of later in the year. And so the comparisons locally between for the fourth quarter are going to be pretty staggering. We expect you'll see a pacing which is very very positive and very strong, but you're comparing it to one of the worst advertising markets in recent memory last year.
And I would imagine digital and Tubi are probably equally strong as national.
Yeah, so digital. Digital very very strong. Tubi, last quarter, I think it was a $100 million quarter. For the first time ever. You remember when we bought the business? It was target was about $140 million in revenue. It's now doing $100 million a quarter and growing. This year I think we've announced we should do over $300 million in revenue, and growing at a very strong rate. I mean, I think in the last earnings call, we called out $1 billion in revenue in the next 2 to 3 years.
And maybe our last topic, Lachlan, which is the sports betting market, a market you know well from your time in News Corp, Fox assets, and investments in the UK and Australia. Huge focus here on sports betting and the growth opportunity. We've seen valuations obviously move up. We don't have a great look on our side of the table into Fox Bet. So I'd love it if you could tell us a little bit about where that business is right now and any kind of, sizing or thinking about the opportunity there. And then I want to close with FanDuel.
Great. This feels like a one of the speed dates, but I'll try. I've got a minute to go. I'll try to close the deal.
We can go over.
So Fox Bet has done very well. As you know, it was originally launched the structured with the Stars Group, which was then bought by Flutter, and which will lead us to the conversation about FanDuel. But Fox Bet itself is going well. What's going even better is the funnel that we've developed into Fox Bet, which is called Fox Bet Super Six. Fox Bet Super Six, this year we decided to give it a really strong push. And what we did is we brought the whole company together. And this is one of the benefits, going back to your original question about forming the company and our initial investor day 2 years ago, the ability to bring the power of Fox Sports, Fox Entertainment, Fox TV stations, and Fox News all together into one sort of on one endeavor was tremendous. And we all got together behind and met weekly on how to drive Fox Bet Super Six harder. And through the football season, we achieved, I think, just shy of a few customers, shy of 4.4 million users of Fox Bet Super Six. And by the way, that's not just sports fans, it's news fans. We did promotions around the elections, around all sorts of trivia, around all sorts of things. So that's worked incredibly well and incredibly valuable. And then you're rolling out Fox Bet in the individual states. Do you want to talk to FanDuel now? Do you have a specific question on FanDuel?
I guess the question, I'll give you the question I get, which is, what are the puts and takes or the pros and cons of exercising your option, this summer? Or, I think you've got a 10-year window to do it. So how do you think about the timing?
So if you think about the two assets, so we've got FoxBet and we have the 18.5% of FanDuel. We also, by the way, have 2.5% of Flutter, which is small percentage wise, but it's valuable. I think it's worth $750 million. But the way we ended up with the 18.5% option of FanDuel, which is really a back-to-back option with their option they had with Fastball, which was the KKR vehicle, is that in working with an operator, we're not licensed, so FanDuel operates these brands, and we wanted to have we want to be completely aligned with our partners. And so by being aligned as having a 50% option in FoxBet, but also having the option in FanDuel was incredibly important to us. And we think, drives a tremendous amount of value. So the option is exercisable from the summer. It's a 10-year option with a 5% escalator once the base price is fixed. We're not licensed today, so we can't exercise that option without getting licensed. And I suppose when you would exercise the option really depends on what your capital needs are elsewhere. What other M&A we might be looking at in other parts of the business or new businesses. But it is a tremendous option to have, and we're looking forward to working with Flutter for a long time to come.
And Lachlan, I think on your earnings call, you suggested the value you can buy in at is the sort of the one we saw in that Fastball transaction. Is that the right way to think about it, or is there some uncertainty around that?
There's a couple of opinions around it. Our reading of this nature of the back-to-back option is that we really effectively step into Fastball's option, and we believe that that's exercised at the price that they sold to Flutter at was the end of last year or beginning this year, and so that's our reading of it, and the alternative is no worse than sort of market today. You still have the 10-year option, and so there's a spread between what Flutter paid and market.
And is getting licensed, is that an obstacle to exercising it, or that's just, is that, I guess, I, paperwork's probably oversimplifying it, but.
Yeah, look, I think it's, I don't think it's a, it's a, it's not a huge obstacle. I know people who've been through it, it's important. It's an important part of the regulatory process. But if you don't need to do it, you generally don't do it. And to create value, we would do it at the right time.
My last question to you was going to be trying to get you to talk more about your buyback ambitions, particularly given your stock price. Stock's up, I think, 15% plus since I wrote that question down. So it's a little less interesting, but on a relative basis, you're trading at a pretty substantial discount, to the Viacoms and Discoveries of the world. I'm sure you are aware of that. When you think about buybacks versus relative to diversification efforts, is there a framework or anything you would add from what we talked about earlier in our conversation? I know you touched on it back when we were chatting earlier.
When we announced our buyback, I know one of the things that the market's always skeptical when people announce a buyback is a buyback going to be completed, right? And there's always a level of skepticism saying, buyback's announced, but a lot of companies don't actually complete them. And we were very transparent, very honest, say, we're not going to announce a buyback unless we plan to complete it. And so with this buyback, as I said, we'll have bought back a billion shares by the end of this fiscal year. $1 billion worth of shares, and I think that leaves us another sort of roughly $500 million after that, presumably in the next fiscal year. Now that we have the structure in place, it took us a while to put the structure in place to do this buyback with our board. Now that structure's in place, it's if it's the right thing to do, if the board decides it's the right thing to do, it's a fairly easy thing to continue to buy back, you know, beyond this current authorization. But you're right. You know, we always balance our use of capital, you know, to work out what the best deployment of it is, whether it's a buyback, whether it's investing organically in our operations, or as we've discussed, you know, there are sort of a plethora of opportunities that are inorganic outside of the company to continue to grow, and whether it's in the gaming space or whether it's in a streaming space or elsewhere, you know, it's certainly at the forefront of the management team's sort of considerations and mind. But as of now, you know, we will finish the $1 billion this fiscal year. I think we absolutely plan to at least finish the next $500 million next fiscal year. But we'll always balance that against other needs.
Okay. Anything you want to end on as we wrap up, as you look out and come out of this pandemic with Fox?
No, look, I think we've come out of the pandemic, having proven, the thesis behind the business as we formed it a couple of years ago. You know, one of the things we talked about was that we would, achieve $1 billion in retransmission revenue by 2022. And, you know, we're absolutely on track to achieve that, even in light of, you know, a pandemic and subscriber declines at the level they're declining. We are seeing them start to ameliorate somewhat, by the way. So we think the company's incredibly strong. We've got a strong balance sheet. The management team that we know we really cherry-picked to run this business is working well together, is very focused. It was a good year not to own movie studios and theme parks and things, and we're coming out of the pandemic, you know, much stronger for it.
Well, great. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm still going to try to drag you up to San Francisco next year. Hopefully we can make that happen.
I look forward to it, Ben. And look, I do appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, as always, and to speak to everyone on this call. So it's a great pleasure.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll speak to you soon.
Great. Thank you, Ben. Thanks, everyone.